Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Glad that you could stop by today. We're on summer break for the entire month of August, so we're dipping back into the archive to share intentional play activities, ideas, and interviews with experts who have the same passion as you to want to make the most of their playtime with their little kids. So today we're looking ahead to times when the kids are in school, daycare, or nursery, maybe with a childminder or a nanny. We're asking the question, how much time do they have outside for recess? It's really interesting that different countries mandate and suggest different times. Then each school district or county and within a country, a different time again. The bad news is most of us don't know how much time our kids spend outside. All kids need lots of time outside every day. But for many children, this just doesn't happen. It's really quite surprising. This podcast today is about getting us to ask questions and to be informed. Maybe you're happy with the amount of time. Maybe you have no idea if they get regular play outdoors each day, every week. So let's get talking to our friends, our family elsewhere, and see what everybody's doing in different places. Wherever you live in the world, playtime and recess is often the first activity that gets squeezed. And as parents raising playful tots, this isn't what we want. So today's interview is with Meg Rosker, and it was recorded in 2011. The original show and notes are found at raisingplayfultots.com/70. That's 70. Feel free to drop by those show notes for today's show or today's show's show notes to leave your comments. This week's show is an interview with Meg Rosker, writer and play advocate. We got all excited about recess and playtime in schools, nurseries, and other institutions that our children use. That's all coming up in today's show. I hope you'll stick around. If you have any comments about the show, want to share your play ideas, then try the Facebook page or Twitter or comment at the website. I also have show notes for each show. Let me know what you'd really love to hear more about. My email is melitsa@raisingplayfultots.com. That's M-E-L-I-T-S-A. I'll be right back after this short break.
Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many treats? Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many treats in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Today I'm talking to Meg Rosker, writer and play advocate, a mum to three kids, former public school teacher and former Teach for America employee. She has seen firsthand the devastating effects the loss of play has had on children and families in America. Welcome to the show, Meg.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I wanted to talk to you today about that time in the day when children pause from their work of play and go outside and engage in play activities with their peers. Recess, break time, play time, whatever you want to call it. At the beginning of the year, you appeared in the New York Times with the headline, "Effort to Restore Children's Play Gains Momentum." Can you tell us a little bit about that article?
She did a wonderful job of posing the problem there. And the crux of the problem is that here in the United States, and I believe in some other countries as well, play and recess and break time during school has really suffered recently. There's not much of it left. In fact, 40% of children in the United States don't even have it anymore. The problem is that we're teaching a lot of academics towards tests. We're pushing very aggressively, especially in the younger grades. In the United States, we have a lot of programs for preschool children, younger and younger. I just saw another one now. They want to mandate preschool for like 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds, very young. Children this age really need to do a lot of exploring And they're not necessarily developmentally ready to sit down and do the sort of aggressive work that we're having them do in school. Many believe, including myself, that this is not going to benefit children. It's not going to make them necessarily smarter or more innovative or better supporters and community members as they grow older or better parents. There's a lot we learn in play, a lot of social skills that we learn. You just can't learn those sitting at a desk reading a book all day or preparing for a test. There's just things that we need to learn in other venues.
You mentioned earlier how recess has been reduced in many schools. For many of the under fives, it's completely disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And you stated some of the reasons, and, you know, standards being one of them, and squeezing the curriculum in schools.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've noticed also is the behavioral problems that happen during that break time and the recess. You know, as a former teacher, I'm sure you remember the times that you spent after break time dealing with, I want to say, the fallout of what happened in the playtime and, you know, at recess.
Yeah. This is one of the arguments when I met with my local primary school. This was one of the arguments for not having recess, was because of this fallout, as you say. Children transitioning back to the classroom often have a hard time settling down. As a mom and I was a kindergarten teacher, I think that it does require organization, and it takes a teacher being very proactive and explaining appropriate behaviors in appropriate places. This is one way we play here on the playground, and this is something we can do here, run and scream and jump. Those are things we do outside. And then this is the behaviors that we have inside. I know with my own kids just at home, I go through that all the time with my 6-year-old. So I feel there are ways that we can work with children, that tossing out recess is a little bit like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I understand there's an issue there. It takes a lot of time sometimes to settle children, but there are things that can be done to help that situation.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's very easy to nibble away at recess and break time in general, because it's the one thing that everybody thinks, oh, they can do without 5 minutes here, or they can take a little bit here, they won't notice it, but we could really do with adding to some other academic endeavor.
Sure.
What have you found happens to the under fives when there is reduced playtime or recess?
Immediate effect that you see with my son, we had him in kindergarten for a while, and we eventually stopped because I felt the atmosphere was just too controlled. But what I found was that he would come home, because he had been in this very structured environment all day, and he would come home and he would just kind of like lose it. You know, he would just melt down. He'd had so much pressure put on him during the day that I saw a lot of tantrums when he came home. I saw he was very sensitive. He didn't want to share well. He had a lot of energy, but he was also kind of emotionally exhausted, because emotionally he had to carry a lot of stress and of that academic pressure that we put on these young children, being made to sit still for long periods of time, going over and over and over the same academic information. He would come home and tell me, "Mom, we do the same thing every day."
Yeah.
That's not the sort of atmosphere that allows children to explore very well. And I think that a real structured environment, eventually, I think it really curbs a child's ability to be creative and innovative. And innovation is something though a lot of Western countries have really prided themselves on. I don't know if you're going to continue to have that same sort of innovative culture if you're not allowing children to do that at a very young age. It's not like they're going to develop it when they get older. You know, that's something you acquire when you're very young. Now, we don't have any long-term study on what it's like to grow up only teaching to test. This just started in the last 10 years. I don't know. You'll have to look at what the people are like that are running our societies in another 20 or 30 years and see what kind of people they are.
Yeah. Can you share your experiences of recess in your child's school?
In my son's school, the kindergarten had recess for the last half hour of the day. It was a full day kindergarten. So that means they went from 8:30 to around 2:00 with no break. And then after kindergarten, there's no recess at all.
Oh.
So first grade through fifth grade, there is no recess. The teachers have, some of the teachers have a merit system in their classroom where you could earn free time. though that really doesn't benefit some of the children that probably really need recess the most.
Yes.
They have gym class 4 days a week, but that does mean there's 1 day a week when there is no physical activity whatsoever.
Right. Wow, that's very different experience than I expected to hear. I wonder, when you share that experience with other people, whether you get the same reaction, and in fact, whether people up and down the country know what it's like in other places, because that's shocking. That really shocks me to hear that.
You know, I just did an interview today with our local NBC station, and the woman that was interviewing me did not have children, and she asked me the exact same question you just asked me, and I thought she was going to fall off her chair. Like, she couldn't believe it. She goes, I don't have kids, but that seems almost abusive to me. And
yes.
I was like, yeah, I think you could really make that argument.
Yeah, that's pretty scary to think that that's accepted. That will have had to have gone through... People will have had to have made those decisions, and then there must have been a chance for others to comment on it. And
absolutely.
Not enough people commented, perhaps, for that to have changed. I mean, it just sounds quite frightening for people that are early childhood advocates who you would think know better to have made decisions like that that so radically affect the way those children will be learning.
Yeah, I think the problem here is that I think that a lot of the early childhood advocates you're speaking of and the parents that have obviously very intimate experiences with their children, I don't think they were consulted in that decision. I think right. that when this legislation went down that we have currently about 10 years ago, a lot of the input into that has driven out things like playtime, recess, arts and music and stuff from the schools, I think a lot of that was made just based on the idea that we wanted to perform better on tests. And I think that the people they consulted to do that probably were very pro, you know, test takers. They had statistics to show that this method will get these test scores up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think it was something that they got a well-rounded opinion on.
Right.
And now here we are.
Yes.
Now here we are.
Today I'm talking to Meg Rosca, writer and play advocate. She blogs at letchildrenplay.com, and you can find her on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook it's World Playdate, and on Twitter it's Meg Rosca Play. That's MEGROSKERPLAY. As a former teacher, I'm sure you're familiar with students who didn't finish their work in class and were kept in for break and recess. Most parents get quite upset when they hear that their child is being kept in. Can you offer some alternative solutions that these parents can suggest to these busy teachers?
Well, one thing, I had a discipline system in my classroom, but there was never a consequence that included taking away recess. That just didn't exist. There were things, if it came to recess time and a child hadn't finished their work, they were allowed to go out and play, but when they came back in, it may have been that they missed out on another activity during the day that I felt was something that could be sacrificed. For example, if we went to the computer lab that day, I'd say, you know what, you have to stay for, you know, an extra 10 minutes and finish this up and I'll help you do it and then you can go. So, you know, I just tried to pick a different area and took that out. Maybe they came a few minutes late over to the reading circle or something like this. Because these were areas that I felt we spent so much time focusing on that if you took a child that needed to finish or focus on another task for a few minutes away from one of these things, it was not going to be a devastating experience. And I can't say that it ever was. My kindergartners performed extremely well. And they had recess at least once a day, sometimes twice a day. It's not about amount of time that we spend in the classroom with our children. It's the quality of time that they spend there. If they are there and they're just, like my son would come home and say, doing the same things over and over and over again, I don't think that's a quality education. And I don't think most parents would think so either. If we can cut through some of the fray and focus on those few skills for just a few minutes and then allow a child to go away and have a break and then come back and teach another skill, they're going to absorb more. And that's what I see with talking to other early childhood development development experts. That's what I see as a mom when I homeschool my son. We only spend a small amount of time on reading and a small amount of time on math, and he's excelling beautifully. I don't see any delay.
Yes. No, you're so right. I think as parents, we need to be armed with understanding how our children learn and the best way that we can support them, especially if they are in institutions like schools and daycares and nurseries, that we don't automatically defer to them, but we actually know a little bit about our children and are able to feel, what's the word, empowered to say, yeah, to speak up if we need to.
Right. I absolutely agree. I think a lot of that empowerment that you're talking about has been eroded by the quote-unquote experts. Granted, some of them really are experts, and we should take their opinion into consideration. But as parents, we do know what's best for our children, and because we may not have a certain degree behind our name or a certain a career under our belts, doesn't mean that we don't have something to offer at the table. And that needs to be taken into consideration, that a parent is an expert on what their child needs. They know that child better than anybody else, and that parent, that those community members, when a community comes together and makes decisions about what's happening in a school, the parents have to be heard. It is not simply up to those working at the school or on the school board or the bureaucratic structure. The parents must be brought into the fold and must be heard. The culture and the academics of the community have to be taken into consideration. So every school community will blossom in a very unique way, but hopefully offer lots of success to lots of different kids in different ways that's appropriate for that community. Because what my community school looks like in Florida should not look exactly the same as it does in Virginia or Washington State or California. That's a different population of people with different ideas and concerns and different children. There are things that standards, academic standards, that we might all need to have in common, but how we reach that goal might be different. And parents are the ones that can offer how to get there the fastest, easiest way for their children.
Let's dream a little here and think about if you could see a break time for the under fives. I'm not talking about a break time like we have as parents at home with our children, but a break time at school in an institution. What do you think that you would want to see the children be doing? What would be a good or a great recess experience?
I don't see it being that much different than most of us had when we went to school, and that wasn't that long ago. I see children being outside. I see children having chances. I know we had a playground in one of the elementary schools I went to, that we had a playground with equipment, but we also had a big wide field that was probably, I mean, I didn't know what it was then, but it was probably some sort of soccer field or football field or something. But we were allowed just to roam around in there. And I remember the little girls would pick flowers and the boys would roll around, and it was just a free space. You know, I think offering both kinds of experiences to children and allowing kids to choose the activities they want to do. For some kids, they may not feel like running around and being absolutely insane at recess. Maybe it really does mean sitting down and doing something quiet or talking to a friend or jumping rope or reading a book. But it's their choice. That's what the whole thing is about. That's why gym class doesn't cut it. It's because it's not a free choice. It's still teacher-led. And we need to empower children to make decisions for themselves about what they like to do. That's an important life skill. And right now, the way things are going in classrooms and gym classes, it's all teacher-led all the time. And children need to have some free time.
I don't know about your child, but I know mine. When you ask them about school and say to them, you know, how was school? What did you do? They always tell you what was eaten at lunch with the food and what they did at playtime. They were like,
that's right.
Two things that they always want to tell you.
That's a big clue, right? Like, that's it. They socialized, they ate, and they played. Like, that is the most important thing. And really, that is, I think, at that point in their life, those are the most important pieces of their development.
Mm-hmm. I think totally. I'm thinking now about parent-teacher conferences. You know, and some people come armed with a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just don't know what to say, do you? You sit there and you hear all of these things that are talked about your child, and you just kind of nod and say, yeah, I agree, or you disagree. And I always want to encourage parents to ask about recess or playtime at those times, you know, when they don't have much to say, that they can actually ask a question, because that's when you start to have really interesting conversations with the teacher mm-hmm. and what the school is doing. Because I've had many experiences talking with other parents, and they have no idea how much recess or playtime is going on in schools. They're like, well, I'm sure it's enough. And I say, well, how much? Because I'm just curious to see, like, your story of how little or none is going on.
Right.
And they don't know. And so I said, you should ask, because I think you'll be surprised. We were in a situation last year when they had in kindergarten, it wasn't last year, it was a few years before, in kindergarten they had recess every other week, and one of the weeks they had art instead. They just took recess away and said, well, that's the only way we can do it. We can't do it unless we take recess away and do it that way. And nobody's said anything. Nobody's complained, and everybody's really happy with the art. So we're going to continue to do that. And I really wondered, and I asked other parents in that class, did you know that this is what they did? And they had no idea.
Yeah.
And it wasn't deception from the school's point of view. They had just done it and had said it, and then nobody had said anything.
Right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. We have reached the point, actually, where it's not even on, I don't even feel like it's on the radar for a lot of schools to consider asking what parents think.
Yes.
I remember when, at the beginning of the school year, I was going to these meetings that were open to the public, any parent could go. There was nothing that was being discussed there that really was parent friendly. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we went because we wanted to talk about to the school with recess, but we had to wait through the entire meeting. At the end of the meeting, we had probably about 3.5 minutes because we'd spent the whole meeting looking at charts, breakdowns of test scores, what areas and what standards the teachers need to work with. And there was a representative from every grade level there, and then the administrators there, and we were the only parents. And, like, this is not an atmosphere where a parent's going to come sit. This is not – good Lord.
Yes. Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. No, it's not going to work like that.
No. It's not even conducive. You can't tell a parent to go on a Tuesday night who's just worked full-time and then sit through an hour and a half, maybe a two-hour meeting, to wait for the last 3 minutes of the meeting to get to share what's on their mind. That is not...
It's not going to work. Because it will be like, I need...
It will not work. You will never, ever hear parental input.
It can be hard when you're talking about recess and some of the things we've been talking about today. Some parents can feel that they got at, and schools can feel that they got at. But, you know, we're just trying to encourage the conversation to get going without being confrontational, but also letting our thoughts be known. How would you encourage parents that are tomorrow or even today dropping off their children in daycares, preschools, nurseries to get the conversation going about recess? How would you encourage them to find out, what things would you say?
I mean, I started the conversation with our school, and I would encourage any parent to start the conversation just as lightly and politely and inquisitive, but in a polite way. See where it goes. If they don't get the answer from that person, you can check with another person. But when I started this, I had no idea what I was starting.
Yes.
We went in just very curious. We didn't go in a confrontational way, but I think there is so much divide and so much pressure right now in the educational community, and just worked into the fabric of the culture, that it's very easy for people to feel attacked and get on the defensive quickly. So try and tread lightly but poignantly. Do the best you can. Do the best you can to find out the information, and know that there could be a very real possibility that it could be difficult at this point. It could be difficult.
Today I've been talking to Meg Roska, writer and play advocate. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
This is Brian Clark Howard, web editor with The Daily Green and co-author of several books on green living. And you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. Oh, that was just such an exciting interview with Meg. I think we could have talked on and on and on about recess and playtime. I forgot to mention in the show that Meg also has a Facebook page called Let Children Play. So you can catch up with her there too, not just at the Facebook page that I mentioned in the show. She also has a new site, well, it's been going for a little while now, called Let Children Achieve. Now, originally that site was on blogspot.com, letchildrenachieve.blogspot.com, and you can go there to find a lot of articles. But that moved recently, and it's now the best way to get all the information is letchildrenachieve.tumblr.com. That's TUMBLR.com. Letchildrenachieve.tumblr.com. They have a lot of really great ideas that are over there at that blog, Let Children Achieve. It's a new site that's more about general education and reform and child development. So it gives you a chance to learn more about the general side of education compared to what we were just talking about today. I hope that the interview has given you some inspiration for you to find out about your school or nursery and what your children are doing. If you're at home, how do you keep playtime from being the same? What's playtime like in your part of the world? Is weather a problem? We didn't really talk much about that during the interview. You know, do you have to have sunscreen and sun hats? And what's the shade like where you are? Is it windy? And wet plays, is that the problem that you have where you are? Does it bother you if your child is kept in to finish work? And one question I was thinking of, and I think I'm going to make this the question of the podcast for this week, is I wonder who has the longest recess or playtime among all of our listeners to the show. Let's take a poll. So for your under five child, let's state the time in minutes per day of recess or playtime that they have when they are in like an institution, or maybe we could also include those people that have children, those of us that have children at home. So if you're carers and you manage a group of children, or your mums and dads that have children at home with you, how long would you say that your child has for playtime, free play, outside? By themselves each day. It will be really interesting to see from all the countries around the world what they do. We've heard very much what Meg does and what's happening in her corner of the world in America, and you had a little bit about what was happening to me when I was living in the States, and a little bit about here too in the UK. But what about everywhere else? I know that we get downloads from more than 20 different countries around the world. So wouldn't it be super cool if we could hear what was happening in your part of the world? How long do you have recess? So why don't you drop your answer on our Facebook page, or you can comment on our show notes for this show, which would be at raisingplayfultots.com/70. It'll be really interesting to find out how that is. Thanks for listening to the show today. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 70. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play, like going outside. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.